Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturdays.
Hi, it's Anna David here with After Party Pod. Hey guys, I hope you're great. Oh, I've been getting some really, really nice emails. I'm so grateful for them. I don't want to, you know, talk too specifically about any of you. By the way, welcome. Welcome if you're new. You really may be new to the podcast just because I have a guest that I know is incredibly popular and you probably followed him here. So you have no idea who I am or why you're listening, but this is a podcast about addiction and recovery and mental health. And it means the world to me when people email me telling me that they are either they started listening before they got sober, they keep listening as if they're struggling, and that's what this is all about. Now you will notice that my guest today is not an alcoholic or addict. No, he's not, because we decided to do something that I'd like to do more of, which is to say, let's have people on who are just going to talk about their drug and alcohol experiences and not have experiences that almost killed them and that made them need to change their lives. So this is the first like that, and there will be many more, I hope. This one is so fun. It's Kevin Pereira, you guys. Kevin was the co-host of Attack of the Show with Olivia Munn. And that was a show that I was on for 3 years, which is how I know him. And he is probably the sweetest, nicest guy I have ever known. He's also Wunderkind, Wonder Kid. That's what you call somebody who started when he was 8. Working in technology. He talks all about that and started hosting TV shows or radio shows, early podcasts at the age of 14, and started as a PA at G4 and then, you know, obviously ended up as the co-host. Now he has his own media empire. He has a podcast that I was on recently that it was so sweet of him to have me on. He hosts the Pointless Podcast on the Death Squad Podcast Network. Oh no, that's how it started. Now he's doing it on his own at supercreative.tv. Supercreative does a lot of other things besides that podcast. Go to the website to check it out. Now, as I said, right now he's starring, he's hosting True TV's Hack My Life, and that started in September, and it's awesome, and he's doing a billion other things. He's a wunderkind, as I said. The reason this happened is that when I went on his podcast, which I think we recorded a month ago, we were sort of joking about him coming on this one. And I said, you're not an alcoholic or addict. And he said, well, I'd love to talk about my experiences. And it was really, really interesting because, look, I can't diagnose people, but he just, no matter what he's saying about, oh, I got concerned about this and, oh, I had to cut down about this. He's a guy who doesn't sound remotely like an addict to me, but it's totally irresponsible for me to say that because this is all self-diagnosed. Anyway, he has not diagnosed himself. We just talked about all of it. And it is a fascinating conversation, which I completely loved. So I'm going to stop rambling and I'm going to give you Kevin Pereira.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
Just how cash.
Okay, so which one am I? It doesn't matter which one I'm on.
Does it?
No.
It doesn't.
I just want to know which meter is mine. Check.
great.
You're my tech guy today. How do you feel about that?
I have concerns. If I'm going to be honest, if you're deputizing me as your head of tech, I have a couple concerns about the setup in front of us.
I will tell you something.
But I love that you got redundancy.
Well, you know what? Better safe than sorry, as they say.
Totally agree. This is the way to play.
And listeners know I've had some trouble without you here as my tech support.
Okay.
I've had some trouble with audio.
Okay.
So why not double
Which is
record?
Very important. When that's the only medium you have to deliver your message.
I would agree.
Listen, there's no, and I want people to know how raw and real this is.
Exactly.
We have no headphones. I have no idea how loud my voice is right now. I don't know if I'm bleeding into your mic.
I know. You're much more official than I am. But I have a sound guy who fixes everything.
Oh, see, if you have a sound wizard.
Yeah.
A sound intern. Is he paid?
Oh, he's paid.
Oh, wow.
He's
I got to get
great,
me one of them.
Though. He's so great that, he's a millennial.
Oh,
so,
I'm sorry.
No. Not that kind of millennial. He's the kind that came in here to help me with this recorder that was misbehaving and said, you know what you need? You need a podcasting table. Why don't I make you one?
Is that what this is?
No.
Oh, I was like, is this reclaimed TV dinner folding chair? Like, this was on Flea Market Flip. I got it.
This was $5.
I love it. He's making a podcasting table?
Yes, because it has like space to put the mics in.
What a doll.
You might need this in your
what
new
a
space.
Doll.
You don't need this.
I just went through. I'm building out a new space. I just had to buy new arms and new mics and new this and new everything because it's time to do it right.
I hear you. I'm working towards that. But a podcasting table is getting it close to right.
I don't have a dedicated table for podcasting, so you'll be one-upping me. You know, and you've already got the redundancy dame down there. There's two recorders here. This is very nice. I'm seated. This is yak's fur. It's the most comfortable chair I've ever been in my life with gold leaf. I'm resting my arms. This is like something Kanye would sit in. You offered me a bevy of hot teas when I arrived.
Just choices.
And in being on the 45th floor of a high rise in downtown LA, which is insane. Congratulations
on
all the success.
Thank you.
The view is so amazing. I'm having trouble concentrating. So.
You know, I will have you know that chair you're sitting on is actually kind of amazing. The real one, not the Kanye chair.
Oh, okay. Not the one that I paint. We could paint whatever picture
for the
listeners.
I know.
Okay,
so
tell me about the chair that I'm actually
on. I don't have that much to tell you about it. It is it is from a flea market, but if you look at it, it's really cool.
It's really cool. This looks like, if this were upside down, this would hold carts at a Whole Foods, like a little hand cart.
I don't think that's a good description.
That's not, what about golf balls at a driving range?
It is really cool. I mean, there's some style to that.
This chair has more history and character than I do.
And
like
me.
This chair has seen some things.
Yeah.
Not just asses. This thing has been through a war. I think the South seceded this chair at some point.
So you're calling it an antique.
Absolutely. It's vintage.
It appreciates
and shabby
that.
Chic.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. So, okay, I'm so glad that we have talked endlessly about things that no one can see.
This is a great podcast. Thank you so much for having me. And
then
I dropped the mic and what?
No. So, but like as, okay, first of all, I loved going on your podcast recently.
Loved having you. Thank you.
I was so grateful you asked me. And it was so fun because as discussed, and I don't know, I feel like your people follow you everywhere, so I don't want to be too redundant for them that are listening to this for the first time because you're on it. So I don't want to rehash too much, but I want to rehash a little bit.
Let's hash it up and hash it out. Assume that like I get 8% engagement of my followers and I have 12, so I wouldn't worry about retreading.
Can I tell you, when you retweeted our podcast, I think I went up 1,000 followers.
Hey, that's a thing.
I mean, the power you have.
I'm drunk with it right now.
I can tell.
And alcohol.
Okay.
But those two things combined.
Which is great because what a good segue. And so this is exciting too. I mean, I want to do catch up in a second. But since you did say drink.
I did say.
I thought it was such a good time to transition. Because the reason this is great is that you, I don't care what you say, are not an addict or an alcoholic. You have, done your share of drinking.
I have done my share of everything, and now I have found out how hot the flame is. I have grabbed the candle and been burnt and gone, okay, this is what I can do, and this is the amount with which I can do it before it degrades my health or my career.
Well, okay, and I guess I just, and I, it ne- I know that this is ludicrous because people who drink heavily or have any sort of issues or thoughts about it don't look any one way.
Mm-hmm.
But it never really computes in my head when you talk about it.
About using substances?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And, you know, back in the day when we were, when we would sort of have, like, and like we said in your podcast, we didn't have a ton of interaction on Attack of the Show because I did that segment with Olivia.
Sure.
You did everything else with Olivia.
Right.
And you and I, you were in your pants four times, if that.
If that, yeah, if that.
Like, I think we started out, I remember there was one with you, Zach, Olivia.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That was a four-headed Hydra? That's not safe for TV. That didn't work out.
You did it once. You know, once.
Look, we tried a lot of things. We piloted on air daily.
Yeah.
That was life to you. But we didn't get to interact much because that show, as we alluded to in the other cast, was it's a storm.
Yeah.
And your segment is the eye of the storm for 3.5 minutes.
Right.
And then you don't have time to think about your exit strategy. You're swept up in the next thing that's swirling around. So.
Well, yes. For you, for sure. Me, I would ship in once a month.
Right.
Do my
in a cargo container. We would unpack it, remove all the peanuts from you.
I was in these chairs, which is weird.
That's right. These vintage FedEx shipping chairs.
Yes, yes. But I would come in and literally we would do my month segments in maybe 15
That's
minutes.
Right.
Like, we got it down to, like, Olivia didn't have the time really. Mm-hmm. And so it would literally, we'd do. It was great for me. I'm doing a month's worth of work in 15 minutes.
And go change your top, and let's get back out.
Yeah.
And here's a new necklace, and back out. And here's another set of fake questions from our producers, and answer those, and good day.
I think we did get a real question now.
Oh, no, we totally did. But a lot of the times the recordings were so low light or so just not good for TV that we would have to, or they'd be like a forum text thing and we would have a producer recreate it on camera. But we definitely got a ton of legitimate questions.
I mean, is a ton overstating things?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I think
I was in the dark about, again,
oh, no.
I come
a ton
in for
is
15 minutes. What's
yeah,
not?
No, a ton is relative, but considering the amount of attention that our show had, we had quite a bit of interest in that segment. I mean, that segment lasted forever. There were some segments that we got through half of the segment on air and we're like, well, we're never doing that again. Let's not even finish it. You know, and the any sort of sex question stuff did well for us.
You know, there's something about that that's appealing to people. I don't know why.
Because everybody either has it or wants to have it.
Yeah, it's as they say, a sexy topic. Yeah, it was. I did it for 3 years, and then I think it continued till the end with Drunk Uncle Ted.
That's right.
You know, but that was a great run, and as we talked about, like, I just went in for one day, had a meltdown because it took too long, and then suddenly they were like, "Yeah, do this." But your path was even more like unpredictable.
Sure.
But so let's talk about you being, we're going to get back to drinking, don't worry.
Okay, yeah. I felt bad because I feel like I
avoided in every way.
No, did I?
No.
Oh, I was like, did I push the train off the tracks and try to distract from something? I'm happy to talk about the drink or
we're
the lack thereof.
We're going to get to it.
Okay.
We're going to get to it. But I want anyone who, for some reason, doesn't know about your career trajectory to know.
I assume most don't. I was a computer nerd at a very young age. I ran a bulletin board system when I was 8 years old.
8 years old?
Yeah, yeah.
What does that mean, you ran a bulletin board system?
So before the series of tubes that we know as the internet was really popular and really around, and there was all this interconnectivity, people ran bulletin boards. So imagine literally a cork board at a guitar center, you know, or at a coffee shop where people post a message or post a picture or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that, but digital. So you dial into somebody's computer one at a time because it was through the phone line. And you would connect and you would have 20 minutes or 10 minutes to post a message, to read a message, to play a game, to download something, a file, an image, a song, whatever. And it was like everybody ran their own individual bulletin board. So it's like, think of them, they're like offline websites, basically. So if you wanted to connect to my computer, you would dial my house using your computer directly.
Dial your phone number, your
correct.
Phone
you would have
number.
Your modem, call out to my modem.
Okay.
There would be a loud, screeching, robotic handshaking.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yep, yep, like a Roomba having sex with RoboCop.
Right.
Very, very screechy robot noises. And then you were connected to my machine, and you would log in. You'd have your own little login, and you could leave messages, you could post things, you could play games with the other people who were dialing in, but it was only one user at a time with that phone line. So someone else would try to dial in, they would get a busy signal until your session was done or you logged out, then someone could log in. It's all a roundabout way of saying I was really into communication and connectivity and computers at a super young age. So,
I mean, question.
Sure.
Was how long after that was there our dial-up and our, you know, our own... couldn't have been that much longer.
You mean like the American Online sort of put in the scene? Yeah, that was, some of that was happening simultaneously towards the end of the 80s, and then early to mid 90s it really caught on, and bulletin boards pretty much died out.
Right.
Because it was like, well, why do I want to waste time trying to connect to one thing when I could connect to something that's got everybody, the entire world on it, versus this one little computer in some guy's garage in the East Bay.
Right.
So AOL and the dial-up internet providers took over, bulletin boards died out, but it was a really fascinating, awesome time where you were connecting usually to people around you because you were avoiding long-distance calls.
Right.
So there was a sense of community, and because there was such a barrier to entry, you had to figure out how to make a computer, which was this unwieldy refrigerator-sized demon.
Right.
You know, you had to figure out how to get it to talk through a crappy phone line to somebody else's computer. The barrier to entry was high, so it was typically really interesting, smart, motivated people connecting with other interesting, smart, motivated people on a very local level.
Yeah.
So there were meetups, there were games, there was all sorts of stuff. And me as like this 8 to 10 year old kid when I thrived, I was an absolute nobody in the physical realm.
Right.
But online, I had my bulletin board. I was a systems operator.
They were not 8 years. Were you the youngest?
By far in my town. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there were some other youth, but I would go to like the local meetup at the pizzeria. And my parents would take me after I begged and explained that there's nothing weird and Chris Hansen's not going to show up. No one's going to try to, like, you know, diddle me. And I'd be in the pizzeria and people would go up and, like, try to say hello to my father thinking he is immortal, the systems operator.
So cute.
It was really cute. And it was really accepting and a great way to learn and, like, and get comeuppance. And that's what I did. That's where I got my chops, running a bulletin board.
And so then what happened next?
Then I transitioned that into helping run an internet provider, which gave me gobs of bandwidth at a time in the mid-90s where if you wanted to host audio like this or video, it was really expensive and really difficult, but I had access to that. So I launched an online radio show and video show to take advantage of all this extra bandwidth when I wasn't working. And
how old were you then?
It's probably 14, 15 or so. Yeah, when I really like took hold of it and grew the subscribers at the time. There wasn't a podcast. It wasn't a pod. It was just, it was really wonky, but had a lot of hits, made a couple bucks doing it. Was like, well, this is interesting. I never thought about talking for a living or creating video for a living. And years later, a guy who was a fan and who was aware that I was doing that when at such a young age became one of the founding partners of G4, this upstart television network about video games and technology. And he called me up and said, what are you doing? And at the time I said, I'm 18 and I hate Northern California. And he said, come on down to LA. You get to be a PA. And I didn't know what that was.
So you said yes.
But I came on down. Yeah. Packed everything and moved over the course of 3 days.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Took the big chance.
And where in Northern California are you from again?
East Bay, a little town called Antioch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a university there. Different Antioch University.
Antioch University, is, I think that's on the East Coast. Yeah, okay. But everybody thinks it's so prestigious because they hear Antioch.
Yeah.
Oh, it's either that or a Monty Python reference. But really, it was a small commuter town connected to the Delta, which I think parts of the Delta have the reputation for being the crank capital of North America because of all the little channels that people smuggle their drugs through.
Bit of trivia for the listener.
Just, you know, I was also just planting a seed in case you wanted to get back to drug talk.
Yeah,
I thought that
crack.
Might be.
Well, no, and I appreciate that.
Wherever
appreciate,
you want
to
go.
I'm going to do like lily pad jumping from like drinking to like crack capital. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
But first, we're getting you to LA. You're only 18.
Yeah.
In story.
18
so,
in LA.
So you move to some part of LA.
Yeah, Koreatown.
Koreatown. Kind of trendy now.
Sure, but not then.
Not then.
It would leapfrog over, you know, cadavers and cockroaches to make my way to a boba tea joint.
And were parents going, what the fuck?
Yeah, they were. They had no idea what was going on. My mom was mortified that I wasn't going to get my speech credit for my community college class that they made me enroll in. And I was just like, nothing. I wanted nothing to do with college. I was tired of school. I said, anything's got to be better than this.
So, right.
Moved to LA, became a production assistant, and
was G4 over on the west side where it was when I started?
Yeah, it was pretty close to that. Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty
close.
Who
was the person who was your fan that got you there? Someone I wouldn't know or someone
No, he was gone, I think, before most of the transitions happened and like Attack of the Show was nowhere in the picture. That was like 5 years later. But it was a guy named Scott Rubin who, again, he found early success in his like mid-20s streaming audio and video on the web out of New York. And then he vouched for me. You know, he totally gave me a shot and was like, this is the guy. So I came with in a suit with a reel and two resumes.
So cute.
One, the business resume, like totally formal, and then the other, my gaming and tech resume to show the consoles I grew. Way overkill for a production assistant.
Right.
Usually it's just like, do you have a car?
Right.
Do you not smoke too much pot?
Right.
You know, can we trust you with a key to the building temporarily?
Right.
But I came correct and got the gig and was, you know, I killed myself to show appreciation for him and to make the best I could of this opportunity.
You were really thrilled to be a PA.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't care.
But you learned quickly. Were you still thrilled?
That wore off, I think, about a year in, and not because... I mean, to be clear, when I was a PA, I was writing host copy. I was gathering the show reel. I was pitching topics. Which was great. I'm not complaining about the access that I got. It was my college. It was my boot camp. I got to learn how to do so much. But I was only being paid as a PA, and I was doing four jobs, including about halfway into that first year, they gave me a shot of hosting on air. Yeah. So I'm now rolling into a studio, hosting three shows next to an American Gladiator... and a rapper, I would leave that studio, go back, do all my PA duties, and I didn't get a single dime extra.
Well, talk about something that paid off.
Happily.
Without money then.
Happily. And was happy to do it. Had a smile on my face despite a nervous breakdown phone call to my mom after my first shoot where I'm like, I'm moving home and I hate this and I hate TV and I'm... Despite that, loved it. But, you know, after 6 months, a year of that, I was like, hey, guys, I'm actually doing a decent job at this hosting thing.
Right.
And I'm not even getting credit for it. Can we work on that a little bit? And so it did ultimately pay off. But there were a few months of feeling really underappreciated and undervalued.
And then when did you transition into I'm not a PA, I'm just a host?
About a year after there, I said, hey, guys, I'm doing all this stuff. Can I get a better job title and, you know, a slight pay bump? You don't have to pay me to be a host, but... something. Yeah. So I became an associate producer on a news show called Pulse. Mm-hmm. And that was an insane period of my life because I got to travel the entire world covering video game stories. I got to go to I played games on the Great Wall of China at the age of like 21.
Was your dream?
I wouldn't have ever dreamed that big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My dreams are really boring.
Yeah.
I'm naked somewhere. There's maybe a dragon. Someone laughs at me and I cry and I wake up. Like that's the loftiest dream I've had in a long while. This was otherworldly. I mean, I was living out of a suitcase for a while, which was awesome at that age.
Yeah.
Traveling the world, meeting every walk of life you could imagine. Going to Japan, going to China, like just cutting my teeth in a great, great way. And
so
yeah, and I did a pretty good job of it. I kept my nose and eyes and head above water, and then years later made the case for becoming a supervising producer of a thing, and then eventually an executive producer, and then, you know, getting to call my own shots within that network. But it took me almost 7 years to get to that point, and then I hung in there for another 4 or 5 years. So it was quite a run.
I did not know you were there that long.
I was there for over a decade. A little over a decade.
Oh my God. And so, since I would love to weave in, so were you drinking? You were here, you were 18, going, you know, 20, oh, going
my
all
first,
over the world.
My first Corona Light experience was when I was like, I think 19 years old at the company Christmas party, drinking underage, making out with a girl from the human resources department.
Interesting.
Yeah, real bad move. I remember poking the then president of the network in the chest. I'd never been drunk before. So I remember poking him in the chest and slurringly telling him that I'm the future of your company and I just want you to know it. Real ballsy move. I mean, he would have been well within his reason to let me go that night before I could get into a cab.
Yeah.
And yet it...
He was charmed by it. He overlooked it because you were so good.
I think he brushed it off as, we'll see, kid. And we're still friends to this day. And I consider him a mentor. He's awesome.
Was he still around when I was there? Probably not.
No, I think when you started, I think Neil Tiles was the president. Yeah, this was the guy right before him. This was Charles Hirshhorn, the founder of the network. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had to precariously balance really coming of age, living away from home for the first time, living away from a girlfriend, having no friends, and working myself sometimes 6:30 in the morning till 10:30 at night for an entire week straight to get all the work done plus the extra stuff. And then trying to figure out, what are these drugs that people are talking about and taking all around me? What is this? A booze? Well, what does that do? What happens if I drink this whole handle of Jim Beam? How awesome does my night get? Oh, I end up in a shopping cart and asleep until 3 a.m. That's
really
dangerous.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I had to figure it out because I couldn't burn too bright. I was very focused on the opportunity and my job. I took great pride and responsibility. But I had to, again, do the tightrope. I think the worst that it got was, I think I've told this story. No, I don't know if I've told this story publicly, but it was during a Halo launch in New York.
Mm-hmm.
The night before, I was offered mushrooms by a bunch of people in a downtown LA loft, which I took and mm-hmm. had a very, very bad trip. I thought City Hall was a robot about to kill us. And then, I mean, it's comical now, but I thought it was a robot and it was coming for us. And then the world outside of the loft that we were in had crumbled and melted away, and I didn't know how to tell the other guys, you know, which was really, that was a lot of pressure on me.
A lot.
So that manifested in itself in me just crying for 20 straight minutes, and then having my internal monologue come out external to the point where I'm like, why are you looking at me right now? Why are you looking at me like I'm talking to you? Full on flip my fucking mind, right?
Can I curse? Sorry? Yeah, of course.
Yeah, crying. Sad, angry, laugh. I mean, the emotional spectrum was washing through me. And in their infinite wisdom, oh, Kevin's having a bad experience. Let's give him a bunch of ecstasy, which he's never had before. Mm. And that will make him happy.
Right.
Except I don't remember 4 or 5 hours of the experience after that. I just remember coming to at around 4 a.m. There's like 3 people left. I literally can't retain a sentence. Like, people are speaking and I'm seeing words coming out of their mouth,
mm-hmm.
but I have to, my head is jerking from side to side because I'm trying to read the mm-hmm. rest of the sentence mm-hmm. as it scrolls by, like a prompter.
You're seeing it as words written.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, synesthesia. Okay. But my brain was fried, wires were crossed, and I'm seeing this happen. All the while, I know I've got to be on a plane at 8 a.m.
That part's true.
That part is true. Okay. I have to get to the airport and get on a plane.
Yeah.
So this manifests itself as me going from terminal to terminal, swiping credit cards into kiosks because they weren't all unified at the time,
yeah.
hoping a ticket spits out, which thankfully one did. I got on a plane.
Yeah.
Thankfully ran into my producer before I got on said plane.
Right.
He was in recovery.
Right.
He recognized right away that maybe I had had a rough night the night before. He's like, what happened? Tell me everything. I was so ashamed and scared. I had never been this unprofessional ever. Right. This was a real new low for me.
Right.
He was very comforting. We land in New York. He's like, okay, so let's get your bag. I'm like, bag? He's like, dude, it's snowing out. They're launching Halo tomorrow. You got to be, or tonight, rather. It was that night. He's like, you got to be in the middle of Times Square. You're wearing a t-shirt and jeans.
You didn't bring a bag?
I didn't know. What? I was lucky. Yeah, I barely got, hey guys, I need someone to bring you to an airport out before right. vomiting again. Like, it was miserable. So that whole day was me in a shower in a fetal position with warm water, yeah. like going over me, like green, vomiting. You know, he went out, he tried to buy me some layers. He was very kind,
yeah.
but it was just me shivering that night as I'm trying to interview folks from Microsoft about this new, this first person shooter. It's great. I think it was Halo 2 or something.
Oh my God.
Hopefully paints a picture of how it's very precarious to come of age
yes.
on camera
yes.
with no real knowledge or no mentorship or stewardship of what drugs and alcohol, what they can do to you and how they can do it to you, and experimenting while still trying to keep that shit together, you know?
Do you think because you spent a lot of your youth doing the computer stuff, when other kids were learning that you were not?
Yeah, there's definitely a facet to that.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, because people in Antioch, there wasn't anything to do. There really wasn't, you know. And I was in a couple bands, and so when we go gig out, I would see a bunch of other folks like smoking pot or, you know, trying. I think a couple tried cocaine or whatever, and I would see that, and I'm like, no, I'm here to play the music. I don't want to affect my performance. And play the music, you know. And then I go back home, and I know that. When I'm at home and they're at home, they're thinking, well, I got nothing to do. I'll smoke this pot. But for me, I was like, I got everything to do. I've got chat rooms I can be in. I've got right. videos that I can cut. I've got games that I can play. So I sort of was able to make my own fun
right.
and make my sort of escape, if you will.
But your bandmates, did they talk about like drugs? Were you not even?
Not really. They knew not to offer it to me. I mean, to be fair, some of these guys are the greatest, kindest guys in the world, but I knew they didn't have a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that they couldn't hold down a job at a part-time pizzeria. I knew right. that they, you know, hated their parents. I knew that they got into a lot of trouble. I knew they weren't getting good grades. I didn't need to go, oh, well, what are they doing? I'll have that. Everything right. else seems to be going well. I just right. knew I loved hanging out with them and playing good music with them.
Right.
What we thought was good music at the time, you know?
Any recordings still around?
There's a handful.
Nice.
There's a handful. I wouldn't ever wish that upon anybody.
Maybe I'll find them and post them with this episode.
That would be a huge waste of your time.
Deep but by web. All means, I bet they're deep.
They're real deep cuts. Real deep cuts.
Now, okay, so question. Yeah. So mushrooms, I don't hear of that many people having really scary experiences on mushrooms.
Oh, really?
I don't hear about it. I'm sure it happens.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, look, I've probably done them 4 or 5 times in my life. I won't ever do them again. I know that much. And I had one of the greatest nights of my life ever on them. Like, I've never felt more connected. I understood the way the world works. Mm-hmm. I saw other dimensions. I was a great artist. Mm-hmm. I'm not a good draw, but I was sketching some stuff that made a lot of other influenced people go, that's a thing. Greatest night ever on it. But I've also had some of the most terrifying, destructive, scary, holy shit, is my brain going to be able to bounce back from this kind of nights of my life on it? And so I tell anybody, you know, if you're curious, learn about it first. Set and setting is the most important thing. Make sure you have seasoned sitters and whatnot around. But for me personally, I'll never do them again.
Yeah.
Never do them again. I feel very fortunate that I did take a modicum of responsibility whenever I tried anything to make sure that I was in a safe, protected place with people that had experience.
So smart.
You have to be.
Yeah.
Have to be. And if I didn't have the gig, you know, if I didn't have the job, I don't know that I would have dabbled in such a methodical,
right,
responsible way. I like to think that I would have.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. There was always that thing in the back of my head, like, no matter what you do, it's Friday night. And no matter what hell you decide to get into, Monday is coming,
right?
You know, and you got to focus on Sunday about Monday. So you have fun, go learn, go play with friends. But Monday is coming, and I think kept me pretty grounded through the whole thing.
It's interesting because, you know, I think addicts just don't even think that way in general. It's just sort of like, well, yeah, no, I got that job, but I can't even imagine being able to prioritize it. I mean. Mm. When I was doing it, I cannot imagine.
Yeah. We chatted what? Mid January? Early January?
No, I think it was last year.
Was it December?
It's mid January now ish.
Oh my God. Well,
yeah, it was last year.
Trust me, my brain is functioning fine after all of my experimentation. Yeah. That's right. It wasn't December. Okay. Because I was telling you, like, I was thinking about taking pills and partying again. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I should probably be past that. I should probably be done with that. And I literally had to schedule out, okay, this is the date that I can do it.
Right.
I'm going to have 3 or 4 days after with no work, no meetings, hold everything off. And then I'm probably going to be a little shitty on Tuesday through Thursday. Okay, so I'll have a slight rant. I had to schedule my life for a week and change around this one really fun 4 hours on a Friday night.
And you did it?
And I did it. And recently. Mm-hmm. And and it was great. And the ramp back in has been pretty okay. But I think I do need to be done with it. Mm-hmm. I think I have to be, because here I like the cost benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the pros and cons and the scales of justice, right, are deciding this thing, I loaded up a week and a half of recovery and prep and, you know, everything around 4 hours.
Did you need all that time and prep?
I think so.
I think so. Can I ask what it was? Like, what were you, opiates?
No, it was ecstasy, yeah.
Oh, okay. So you recently were like, I need to, you know, I'm going to plan this. And
yeah, I'm going to blow off some steam. It's going to be Friday night. I'm going to take some pills. I'm going to party. It's going to be great. I bought laser light toys. I've got every blinky thing and remote robot cat ears you can get off Amazon. I'm like, this is going to be a wild, super fun, intimate evening. Great. And it was.
And you were at home.
Yeah, I was at home. Not a club atmosphere. Right, nobody was stepping on dubs or.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, what was the, so are you just destroyed the next day, in the next 2 days?
No, I'm okay. I was able to, like, go out and get, like, groceries and stuff and, you know, the stuff that I forgot to get because I was very pre-planning.
Right.
But, you know, the person who indulged with me was pretty much wiped out for 3 days, just exhausted on a couch and just kind of laid up. I bounced back physically much quicker. But I know, like, there were 3 or 4 days there where I was a little depressed. I mean, how could you not chemically be? You released every ounce of serotonin you have to the point where your body says, hey, stop producing it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you have such a great time. Well, yeah, I was a little shitty there. And if to be completely candid, I think it got in the way of our relationship because I organized around her very well. Hey, let me hydrate you. Let me get you good food, clean food. We'll watch some Netflix, whatever. And I gave those 3 days of complete nurture and attention. But then when it was time for me to get back and get back to business and get back to whatever my life is, It was sort of like, well, hey, where's the... Right. Where's the organizing around me? And it was like, oh, she's just now getting back up on her feet.
Right.
So you combine that sort of lack of attention or selfish desire to have someone organize around you with a lack of serotonin.
Yeah.
And suddenly it lowers the quality of your relationship quite a bit.
Yeah.
You take quite a hit.
But then 4 days later, isn't it? Or you're still...
Well, I'm on day three, so let's see what happens tomorrow.
You're like, day three?
No, you said 4 days later. I mean, okay. It's still pretty fresh, but no, I mean, I recognize this, obviously, and I've communicated it.
Right.
Probably not well enough. Probably not as well as I just communicated
it
to you.
Yeah, it's amazing. But
there's,
play this.
But there's no stakes here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, there's
yeah.
no...
Yeah.
There's no...
Yeah, you can say it however you want.
Yeah, I'm giving you one side of the coin, and then
right.
that's the coin.
Right.
So,
right.
I, you know, it has been tough. And then you start to wonder, like, well, maybe this is truly how you feel about things, about yourself, about
yeah.
a relationship, about everything. Maybe this is really how you feel.
So
do you give it more time, or do you act on these impulses? Like,
I mean, that's describing depression so well.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because, you know, the greatest sign of depression is you don't realize you're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I know when I am in it, and like quitting drugs like doesn't mean you don't get in it.
Right.
You know.
No, you're not on drugs anymore. You're not depressed, right? You're great. You're fine.
I really believe that. My first
year
of sobriety,
you don't have swings.
I really thought that.
Really?
Yeah. The pink cloud, they call it. But, you know, when I'm in it, it doesn't matter how many times it's passed. I'm utterly convinced this is it. It's just the way things are now.
Really?
Yeah. And then the thought comes in. Well, it's like what you were saying.
Sure.
You know, the thought comes in, you know, every time you felt like this, it's passed. Well, this time it's different. You know, so you don't do that. You're aware of the fact that it's
like yes.
serotonin.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say because, again, admittedly, I'm still kind of in that fog of war.
Right.
You know, I'm still in it a little bit. And I have faith and confidence that everything will return. Mother Nature will right its wrongs and all good will be restored to the kingdom.
Right.
But, you know, like...
Right.
I don't know.
Well, but if you are depressed right now,
sure. Well,
this
no,
is you.
No. I'm not. Let me. I think I'm far from depressed right
yes.
now. I'm actually super motivated and happy about like certain professional things that are
right.
going on. But I think that you know, if there's an ounce of personal turmoil or conflict, now I have to go. Okay, how long has it been since I had this serotonin blowout, and is that spilling over into here? And then the
right.
other layer of the mind fuck is. But you're so happy and motivated professionally. If you
right.
can feel that happy and that motivated with what's going on in your life professionally, why couldn't you feel that personally?
Oh my God, it's such compartmentalization.
Is that what's going on here? Is
well,
that what's happening?
Men can do this. Men
yeah?
can, I mean, women can too, but men can so easily.
I've been told I'm really good at that by ex-girlfriends.
No, what you just said is amazing. Because
yeah.
like I think a lot of people, if it's they're depressed, it's coloring everything.
Across
it's,
the board.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
like, oh God, I'm doing the wrong career, and my boyfriend is this, and it's just sort of, there's just dark clouds. It's not like dark cloud over one thing and sunny day over another.
Right, okay.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, I'm really walled off. I think I'm really walled off, you know, that I'm able to really clearly separate.
Yeah.
I've always, you know what, I always have been. Much to the probably the detriment of people that have been in my life, both professionally and personally. I've been really, and maybe to the great benefit.
Maybe.
Too.
Yeah.
I think it goes both ways. But I'm really, I've always been really good about going like, this is personal. This is not personal at all.
Mm-hmm.
I feel one way about the way this work thing is going, but that has nothing to do with my relationship with somebody else. But yeah, I'm really good at cutting those two things off. The problem is that I can be myopically focused on a thing,
mm-hmm.
and I have no problem announcing my new priorities.
Right.
You know, so I can go, listen, to anybody, not just to a girlfriend, to family, to good friends, I can go, I love you to death, and I know you know that, right? Of course you do. Great. I'm focused on work right now.
Right.
And that's my number one, and that's all I'm giving it. It's all work, and when work's not happening, I'm recouping, and then I'm right back in it.
So just no balance, basically.
Yeah, I'm really bad at that.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm really bad at that.
But it seems like you have such a well-rounded life to the observer.
From social media? I don't tweet the, just got in another marathon argument session over a Netflix queue, hashtag blessed. You know, like,
right,
you don't
right.
share that. You know, I'm also being, I guess, hyperbolically hard on myself right now. There are definitely times where I go, I'm working here, I announce that, and then in 3 weeks I've got a vacation planned.
Right.
Or in 3 months I'm doing whatever. But it's, even in that scenario, it's always one end of the spectrum. Right. It's either, look, I'm full on working and then I'm shifting that knob and we're going right in full relaxation and then I'm right back into full work. It's always pinging.
I know, but is that so wrong?
I don't think it is.
Yeah.
But they always do.
It's very efficient. I mean, you are so young and you have done so much, and who's to say that that isn't the secret to your success?
Sure. Who's to say it's not holding me back as well, too, that I might not be a lot further along? I don't know. I always feel like even when I throw myself against the wall with work or with anything else, there's a percentage of it that is motivated by being able to better the personal side of things.
Right.
Always.
Right. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're the person on the receiving end of someone suddenly flipping that switch and deciding to go march in that direction and you're not good about doing that yourself,
right,
then it's just you abandon me. You're not organizing around me. Right. You're not meeting my needs. And for what? Because you're over there doing a work. I don't care about that work thing.
Right. Right. And so you have a new show on.
Yeah.
So are you taping every week?
I was in New York for like 3.5 months taping it.
Okay.
Away from all of this. Away from my company, my girlfriend, my family, friends, everything. So I was out there for 3 months. And then now it's just like pickups and stuff.
And to talk about that show a little bit.
It's called Hack My Life. Mm-hmm. It's a show about life hacks. Mm-hmm. Familiar with life hacks?
I am.
So it's a half hour where we explore which ones work, which ones don't, which should you try, which ones are bullshit.
And so I actually remember on Attack of the Show, when I was co-hosting with Chris Hardwick, mm-hmm, we had the Life Hacker woman on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
From the blog, Life Hacker?
From the blog, okay, Life Hacker. And I remember going, just like I did at G4 all the time, what's a life hack?
Right.
You know? God, yeah. So the show, what network is it on?
It's on True TV.
And your co-host, mm-hmm, Brooke, mm-hmm, just to swing it back to me.
Yeah.
I did a book called True Tales of Lust and Love, an anthology based on the storytelling show, which was then made into a YouTube series,
okay,
that never sold, that a production company did, and she was in it.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we never met because they shot it in New York when I was here.
You should. She's hilarious.
Hilarious.
Great stand-up. Great girl. You should absolutely meet with her if you can. Yeah, she's
awesome. I know. I mean, I feel bad because she did this thing and it didn't get picked up. She's in it and I'm not. It's like the craziest thing. It's based on my book and she's not in my book. The whole thing was super random. Somebody told me how funny she was and we got her in it.
I absolve you of feeling bad about that though, because 99% of the stuff never gets picked up and goes anywhere. So I think that's all right.
But so this show did.
The show did get picked up. Yeah. We did a test together. It was like her first time hosting and mm-hmm, we went through a test and people liked it. So they picked it up for 10 episodes and the ratings have been great.
That's
so
amazing.
Season 2 will probably happen if we can find more ways to, like, you know, keep your chips fresh
or clearly iron
your clothes a little bit easier. I mean, yeah.
Is each episode its own hack or you do many?
Many okay, hacks. Yeah, like it'll bounce from, you know, how to, you know, you can throw ice cubes in a dryer to steam your shirts. Kind of a cool hack, right?
Yeah.
To using a pool noodle to keep your boots upright or prevent dings on your car door. Like random stuff.
Yeah.
And it's always so weird when an episode airs because then my timeline on Facebook and Twitter is just people going like, I'm going to buy more shaving cream now so I can stop my bathroom mirror from fogging. It's like people going like, oh, pool noodles are awesome.
Right.
By any other stretch, if these tweets came into your life, you'd be like, oh, people are bipolar. My fans are schizophrenic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's like, oh, they're discovering these life hacks and liking them.
But it's weird because all the episodes are done and you're probably not watching it and knowing what's
going on. Yeah, I try to watch and live tweet when I can, but it's, you know, it is like on a Thursday, I'll get a tweet, you know, like, Doritos are flammable. Yeah, they are. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. You're catching up on a thing that we did three weeks ago.
A long time ago.
That we shot 6 months ago. Got it.
Yeah. And so when is it on?
It's on Tuesday nights.
Tuesday nights.
Are we done? Are we already at the plug portion of the podcast?
No, we plug throughout.
Oh, okay, because I was worried. I was like, I feel like I haven't.
No.
Okay.
You can tell this is a very organized show.
Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
True TV.
Yeah.
At 10:30.
Okay.
So check your local listings. Blah, 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 blah. Hack My Life.
Is this your first big TV thing since Attack?
No, I hosted a game show called Let's Ask America.
Uh-huh.
I hosted that. I sold a show to Sci-Fi and then hosted it.
Okay.
And that was a train wreck. And then I did a syndicated game show. So we would tape 170 episodes.
Oh my God.
In the course of like a month and a half.
Oh my God.
We would do like 7 to 8 a day.
So let's just say that was one of the parts of your life where you were compartmentalizing in a major way.
Oh, and to the point where, like, by the end of it, my body has collapsed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, I had one girlfriend for season 1. And then
she's like, I'm done.
And then another girlfriend for season two. I think it was unrelated. But yeah, but both were just like, they both got like, oh, you're going into this mode. You're done. Yeah.
So, okay. But so back to, I want to go back to this like ecstasy, this shroom ecstasy combo.
Sure.
That you pulled through that to the, in New York, were you able to like, I know you were shivering and shaking.
Barely hold
but
it together.
On, once they were shooting, were you able to kind of, you know, go yeah, into that alternate mode?
Yeah. To probably to great detriment to my overall health. That's always been my mutant power.
Yeah.
Is that when the red light is on, even if I'm like, I hosted a 5-hour E3 special while on a steroid shot, a vitamin B shot, and on like antibiotics for a lung infection. Because I worried myself so sick about the shoot and everything else that I just stressed my body. It would collapse and then I would power through.
Right.
And so much to great my own physical detriment, I would, when that red light was on, man.
Yeah.
I didn't take a day off of hosting, I think, until I was like 3 years into Attack of the Show. So it was like every day I'm there. Red light is on. I'm selling it. Here we go.
Yeah, I think that people can do that. I mean, if you can't do it, you don't get hired anymore.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you miss one big one.
Yeah.
You're done. So.
But so okay. So let's. So then after that, you said, "Oh my God, I cannot do mushrooms."
Except
you did them 3 more times or whatever in your life.
Sure.
And so then what was your, you know, next move?
Well, I learned to sort of be more responsible about usage of things, clearly. And so that gave me the, you know, look, I did X literally and figuratively, and then the next day I had to do Y. Right. That was bad. So let's adjust the next time.
Right.
And so I think it was probably taking ecstasy by itself. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, I read up on the way it affects your body, the chemical makeup of it, the blood-brain barrier pathway, the half-life of residual in your system. Like, I had all the knowledge, the pre- and post-load routine of taking magnesium to stop the jawing and the L-tyrosine for what, like, full-on nerd mode, dabbled into everything. It's like, okay, now I feel confident that I can do this much of this thing on this night and be great for, like, a Monday. And so it was a Simply Jeff concert at the Larchmont. And I took half a pill, and I remember dancing my ass off and playing Apples to Apples until about 3 in the morning.
Oh, what is that?
It's like a game. Card game. It's like for kindergartners, but when you're that fucked up, it's the best game ever. Right. And oh my God, I'm getting to know you so well.
Right.
Is it okay that I'm touching your shoulder? Oh my God, is it okay? You can touch mine too. Oh my God, our shoulders feel amazing. Let's just breathe. It was one of those nights. And then I think shortly thereafter, someone cut up a line on my kitchen counter in Santa Monica, California, was like, have you tried this shit?
Really?
Yeah. And the answer was no, but hold on. Let me give it a quick Google.
Shut up. You were like, Googled cocaine?
Yeah. Arrowhead experience vaults. I'm like, let's see what the onset is and how long it's supposed to last. What are the dangers to look out for? What's the mixing that I'm not supposed to do? All right. Sure. Let me go clean off my countertop.
So you did a line.
Yeah, I think I ended up doing 2 my first time. It was like 2, yeah, 2, and then probably 4 minutes after, I did like 4
well, that's
more.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I was off and running, and I remember waking up the next day feeling like $1 million, which that's not supposed to happen, right? Mm-hmm. I woke up the next day, I was like, it was animated bluebirds landing on my toothbrush. Like, it was a fucking Disney movie. I was so happy. I called my girlfriend. We were long distance at the time. She was in NorCal. I called her, and I told her, I was like, sweetheart, I had the most amazing night last night. So I tried cocaine, and I could hear her soul hit the ground on the other end. And in my head, I'm like, I just had the greatest night ever talking about myself.
Right.
You know, with a room full of other people talking about themselves.
Right.
We all loved each other. It was super high energy. It's amazing.
Right.
And now here I am. I'm trying to share my great experience with you. Why do you not support me?
Right.
You know, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to let you ruin my good day. I'll talk to you later when you had a chance to calm down about the fact that I just snorted cocaine. Senses. Good day.
Yeah.
You know, and then it had a great day. And it's like, well, this is clearly, I can see why people do this every weekend. Hell, I can see why some people do this every day. I mean, this was amazing. And I feel $1 million. So it was like 2 weekends later. Let's try this again. I think I told you. Boy, that was diminishing returns. The second time was like, well, that wasn't as good as the first time. But it was still a pretty okay night. Maybe it's just different stuff. I'll try that one more time.
Yeah.
Third time. Ooh, that wasn't that good at all. I woke up the next day feeling sore, tired. It was a restless sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it was still different stuff. You know what? I'm going to try one more time. And I'm just going to do like 4 times as much just in case. Mm-hmm. Let's set the stakes here. And so I remember I threw like a blowout party in my tiny little one-bedroom Santa Monica apartment.
Mm-hmm.
The entire night was organized around doing cocaine.
Of course.
Which
doesn't seem weird to me at all.
No, but blew my mind at the time. Like, looking back, I'm like, I only was like, who wants to do this with me? Who's going to be game? Who's going to... And I couldn't really afford it at the time, but I bought hundreds of dollars worth of stuff, which was a big investment at the time.
Yeah. That's, you know, a lot of cocaine.
Yeah. Well, I was supplying for everybody. I'm a gracious host. Very much, you know, there was there was Pedialyte and vitamin waters in the fridge and all the cocaine, all the moochers could ask for.
Right.
And I remember distinctly after doing a bit in my bedroom, I was on the little shelf. I'm in the living room area, the other room. Mm-hmm. Guitar Hero is being played. Mm-hmm. The first one. We're rocking out. And then I just remember like slowly inching my way back in line to get back to the cocaine. Yeah. And it was just like a line, a waiting, it was like a receiving line of 15 people snaking through the room. Nobody's partying. No one's really having, I mean, there's loud noises and chatter. No one's really having a great time. We're just penguins. We're lemmings in line waiting for our turn at the dresser. Right. Because by the time we get back, we know we have to wait in line because there's so many people.
So just go right back
in line. Just get right back in line for the ride, right?
You invited too many people. That's,
I clearly had too many people. I probably should have had three more mirrors. I only had one going.
Live, you know, live and learn.
Process priority.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was the worst night ever. It was the absolute worst night ever. I mean, I was like, I felt so empty. I looked around at people that are, some are still my friends, but I was like, in this moment, I don't feel like we are friends. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm being used, even though I offered this.
Yeah.
You know, like really weird waves of emotions. And I felt like shit for like 3 days after. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, my body, my brain, my whatever said, no, you can't sustain.
Was that the last time you did it?
Yeah, that was it.
I mean, that's the thing is, we talked about this on your podcast, but I do think that the difference between, you know, the addict who's going to do cocaine addictively and the non is, yes, diminishing returns, but that fourth time just inspires a fifth and a sixth and, you know, really convincing yourself it's going to be different. But I also will say, I probably had a year or two, I don't want to exaggerate, I'm going to say I had at least 30 times that were great before it started to get what you're talking about as bad. I think memory is very faulty around this kind of thing.
Sure, sure. And I'm sure there's somebody right now going like, you fucking liar. I did it like 10 times with you. You know, like,
right,
like
right.
I don't even, especially on nights where substances are involved. I don't, I feel like, I know I didn't do it more than 5 times.
Right.
The number's like 4 or 5. But yeah, I very clearly remember because I think that first time was so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And probably half because it was a first time and it's new and it's taboo and it's what, and I'm like, it's a sexy drug to do, despite the fact that there's a nasal drip and all this, like the movies have really made it look fucking sexy,
and
it had a price point that meant like usually successful or attractive people, at least in my circle, those were the ones that were doing it. So for me, it was like, oh yeah, I don't mind being associated with everything that this thing has going for it.
Yeah.
And that first night was so amazing that I'm so glad it was that good. And the next day I woke up feeling like I was, you know, the $10 million man because the second time really wasn't that bad in hindsight.
But
it just
it was
wasn't
notable,
as good.
The difference.
That's it.
You know, and the thing you say about the next day, you know, with cocaine, it was always the day after. Like, not that you're still high.
Sure.
But it was weird that it would skip a day as opposed to alcohol or even ecstasy.
Or ecstasy, where it's like 3 or 4 days later. Yeah.
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 It's just interesting. But evil drug. Evil, evil drug.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. And, you know, anybody that I know that does it or has done it, I don't think, like, with weed, look, some people have weed addictions. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Some people use it as a crutch. They're codependent, whatever. I really feel at this point in my life that I've mastered that usage to the point where I'm like once every 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Or I want once a day for a week. I don't feel like it has a grip on me. I'm very good about choosing when I do it. I have not heard a case of cocaine usage where it manages to stay like sort of moderate and in check. And maybe that person exists somewhere. Maybe you know them. I don't know them.
I don't. I mean, maybe for a while.
Sure.
I think people, that's one phase.
Yeah.
That's high school and college.
But where's the Willie Nelson of cocaine?
I'll tell you, though, I do know of people anecdotally, like famous, successful people who seem to do coke. And it's like there's this sort of joke in recovery. Yeah, I was doing some you know, social crack smoking. Like, they're really like... It's amazing. Like, how do you do hard drugs socially for year after year?
Yeah. No, I don't know. Like, even the musicians where you'll hear, again, anecdotally of like, oh, they were shooting heroin.
Yeah.
And they were doing it, you know, once a week. Or they were, I mean, who knows how often you used it. But then they stopped or whatever. I go, well, cool. But again, I don't know the the Snoop Dogg of cocaine. Maybe he exists.
Right.
Maybe they've, you know, they have that longevity. You know, Willie Nelson's still smoking at his concerts in front of Jimmy Buffett. Awesome, man. Because weed, I could get how it's some fatty opioids that burn off in your blood and you're fine after a day or whatever. You know, it's like there's really not the long-term burn. But cocaine?
It
I don't know.
Can be the long-term. I mean, here's my opinion on pot is before the age of 25, when your brain is not fully formed, it can be incredibly dangerous.
Oh, sure. Sure.
After that point, you know, I think that it's case by case. It does seem like a lot of people are fine smoking it. But, you know, I don't know. Now, today, it's like I run across, so many people who are like medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. And they say, I was just on the shoot randomly for this pilot thing I did.
I want to hear.
Well, you know, who knows if it, but it was fun.
Yeah.
And they were all like, medical marijuana people
sure.
and just telling me that it was totally fine to smoke every day and not be addicted. And I don't ever want to be like Susie judging.
Sure.
You know, like, sure. Oh, I'm sober. So, you know, and I don't know. I mean, everyone is so different.
Right. Look, I think one person's wake and bake and they're totally in control of their life is probably true. But the next person's might be a complete lie that they're telling themselves.
Yeah.
Might be complete escapism.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? I know that, you know, there are certain things that I could keep running to every day and probably convince myself that it's totally fine. And for a while, weed was probably one of them. I mean, mm-hmm. there was a time where I was smoking almost every day and I'm like, well, this is great. And then I would go and host an attack of the show. I would never be high for attack. It would mm-hmm. always be like I'd smoke the night before, mm-hmm. but I would go and do attack and I'd be like, man, I was not funny today. I was totally off. Maybe it's because I wasn't high. Oh, shit.
Whoa.
That thought would creep in. You know, and that would start to go. And maybe in reality, it was that I was kind of the weed hangover from the night before, you idiot.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because you didn't get a good night's sleep because it's been proven that THC can, as good as it is for knocking some people out, a good indica will make you go to sleep, it affects your ability to hit REM sleep,
yeah.
which is the most recovery.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows how in control I was? Who knows if I needed that to stay balanced or stay on a path? But I'm here. You know, that's been that's been the journey. And I don't. If someone says that they've got it in control and they seem to be a functioning member of society, be good on you. You know, more power to you. I can't do anything every day. Can't.
Yeah. I mean, and to me, it's a lot about how obsessive is the thinking
right.
about it. You know, if it's something that you're thinking about the whole time you're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it has so much more to do with that to me than how much they're doing it.
Totally valid.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Because that was the moment where it really got scary, where it was like the thought would enter my head.
Yeah.
Maybe this interview would have been a little bit better if I was on pot.
Yeah.
You know? You're definitely, you're funnier when you smoke pot. You should definitely smoke some pot.
Right away, the thought would come, that's scary. Seems like.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time where I did accelerate my usage. I think I hosted Attack of the Show. It's funny. I never did it fully high.
Mm-hmm.
There was like a week where I was like, let's experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 8 a.m. I'd smoke. I'd go to the gym mm-hmm. to try to work out and get it out of my system or whatever.
Oh, the gym. Okay.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh,
it was so good for me. For weight training, it was amazing.
Okay.
You could feel every muscle fiber tear as you do a thing. Or if you're like the runner's high, the literal runner's high, if it was working, I could run for miles.
But after smoking, I can understand edibles and then doing that.
Yeah.
Well,
you're not on the treadmill with a water pipe, you know, gagging and coughing. You smoke, you know, or in your car, you have a couple sips of water, you get in, you stretch it out, and then you settle into your workout. This is what I did.
Yeah.
And it worked so well for me. Like, it motivated me at the gym. It gave me clarity. It allowed me to detach my brain from whatever my physical body was going through
mm-hmm.
in that way. And I could
mm-hmm.
think about things or whatever and just keep going. You know,
mm-hmm.
oh, I'm tired. Shut up. Keep going. You know,
mm-hmm.
by the end of that week or two or 3 weeks where I was trying it out and dabbling here or there, I had my knees were aching because
mm-hmm.
I was running marathons in the
yeah.
morning because
yeah.
the weed was telling me I could keep going.
Right.
And I had, again, that first show that I hosted, oh my God, it was the funniest show I'd had in weeks in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Week three, there was a show that was pretty fucking terrible, which happens anytime you're doing a live show every day.
Right.
Just wasn't off show. And all I could think about was, man, this happened because you were high.
Right.
If you fuck. And thank God that was the thought that came over me because it was like, look, I got to take a step back. And because there was a moment where I'm like, well, maybe I should smoke right before the show because maybe it's wearing off too much before I get out there.
Mm-hmm.
That struggle of the brain is incredible.
I know, but your brain does it well, I think, because you've had, you know, you have concerns about it. You've sure. had concerns, and then you're able to rein it in.
Yeah. I mean, so far where I'm, you know, I'm really, I mean, I'm again, we're all on a path. I don't know where this path ends. I'm 32 now. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've got a pretty good grasp on that. I don't even like to, I rarely drink. I'll have a drink maybe. Mm-hmm. And then I get pissed about the empty calories. I'm that guy.
Wow.
So it's like that ship has sailed, but you, I got to get back. You said something that was so impactful and important about like your brain is growing until the age of 25.
Yeah.
And that is a fact that is so often overlooked.
I
am so happy and so grateful to myself, actually. Yeah. I give myself credit for not, you know, being the 16-year-old at the party at the courts where everybody else is throwing back beers and doing whatever. I was like, no, I like my games and I like my whatever. And thank God, or whatever, a la Flying Spaghetti Monster, whoever you want to thank. Thank Matthew McConaughey, Interstellar. He's tugging on a string and he stopped me from drinking. Thank God, because that's what I tell people now. Like, I've got like 19 and 20-year-old guys interning for me or PAing for me now. Right. And I tell them, I was like, look, you're in L.A., you're going to have a lot of fun. The longer you can hold off from trying things, from experimenting with things. If you know you're going to experiment in the back of your head, there's a piece of you that says, I'm going to smoke some pot or I'm going to get blackout drunk. Or I'm not going to judge you for it because I surely had my run. I had my day. Mm-hmm. Just wait as long as you can. Give your fucking brain the most amount of time it can to form its synapses, to solidly figure out it is before you start hitting it with a sledgehammer and chiseling away. This is so important.
I love that you do that with them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's like paternal. I don't do that with my
I do it while blowing my vape smoke in their face. I'm like, listen, you little asshole.
For you. My brain is fully formed.
I earn the right to destroy my life. Who are you?
I want to just touch on the ayahuasca thing that we talked about on your... So have you... You've done that more than once?
I booked the trip to Peru, went out to Iquitos, went to a sanctuary, and then over the course of a week did 4 sessions of ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. And then the following week did 3 sessions of huachuma, or the San Pedro cactus, which people liken it to a mescaline type experience. Mm-hmm. I've never done mescaline.
Right.
Maybe that is mescaline. Maybe someone's like, that's the same compound. I don't know.
No,
it's San Pedro cactus. Mm-hmm. And this was markedly different than any other night or any other experience in my life where I'm like, let's take a substance. Mm-hmm. Let's try a substance. It's either been recreational escapism, mm-hmm. which I guess you could file under recreational, mm-hmm. but for me, one's a darker mm-hmm. journey, one's a more lighter journey. This was, I had an intention. I was in a setting. I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew I was searching. So I went out with the intention to find whatever the fuck it was I was looking for. And ayahuasca was a powerful, potent, amazing, grueling, gentle teacher. I mean, at the same time, I mean, there's no other way to describe a plant medicine, because mm-hmm. I don't even like calling it a drug, because it's a distillation of a vine mixed with dimethyltryptamine leaves from a tree. DMT is what your brain secretes when you dream.
Okay.
So you get dreamlike visuals and kind of hallucinations sometimes you don't at all. Mm-hmm. And then the ayahuasca is known for its cleansing or purging effects.
Did you purge a lot?
My first session, I sat on a mat for 6.5 hours and got nothing. And sat there and was pissed. Mm. And I was like, did I tell you this already?
No.
I was like, fuck this plant. Fuck Peru. Fuck the shaman. Fuck everything. This is a lie. The pamphlet lied to me. This is all bullshit. I was so mad. I went back to my room and took out my pen and my little journal in my little fucking hut. And like, this bullshit experience. Paid way too much money for this.
Yeah.
And I'm scribbling angrily. And then I stopped and was like, okay, if I'm here to have faith in something or find faith or find a direction, what is the lesson that this plant was trying to fucking teach me as it let me sit there for 6.5 hours feeling nothing but like mild nausea,
right.
listening to people vomit around me in 7.1? I was a fucking guy. Patience.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote down. Nothing, something I've never had in my entire life.
Right.
Never. And I was applauded for it. Oh man, you see something, you want it, you go and get it, don't you? You work so hard, you go get it, instead of, hey, sometimes you just need to chill the fuck out. Things take time. Mm-hmm. So I wrote patience, patience, patience like a madman all over this journal. Hashtag patience, wrote it in bubble letters, a little heart for the eye. Day goes by, we recoup, we eat fresh foods. Next day, ceremony. Are we over?
No, we got it over here.
Oh my God.
Recording.
Oh, we filled a card?
There might,
I am so sorry.
No, that yes,
I'm rambling. I filled up a whole card. Like that's the digital way of telling me to shut up. This thing is like, dude, you're rambling.
No, I will tell you, it's so temperamental, which is why we have the second task.
We love it.
He fixes.
I don't need to hold this now. I'm sorry. So the second session, two days later, I go in with the intentions of patience. I don't ask Mother Ayahuasca for anything because you're supposed to have an intention. I go up and I just say like, I learned to be patient. So if tonight is my night to experience a thing, great. If it's not, thank you for this opportunity, whatever it is. And I really felt genuinely, authentically gracious for traveling so far and spending so much money to get nothing. Sip the cup, the exact same amount that I had the first time. I sit on my mat and within 20 minutes, the cosmos opened up, showed me life, showed me the afterlife. Showed me, like, it was stunning, and it was a visual download of information that I'm still processing and integrating, and then it kicked me in the stomach and the teeth about as hard as something could, and I vomited the weight of the world into a purge bucket. No, it was fucking beautiful. Scary, because 10 minutes in, I'm trembling, my skin is translucent, and with every time I purge in the bucket, I can see what I'm purging out. And it's like, oh, guilt over a relationship issue. Ugh, get that out. Oh, this flashback of a memory of like father abusiveness. Ugh, into the bucket. Oh, a business decision where maybe I wasn't quite as genuine or honest as I should have been. Ah! And it's 10 minutes and I'm trembling. I mean, some people are going through hours of this, but for me it was so violent that I couldn't breathe. I had snot, bile, everything running down my nose. And I remember clutching the purge bucket. I'm seeing like imagery and faces in there. And again, at one point I looked up and I saw me looking back at me, a weird version. It was fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
Bizarre. But very clearly a voice, not my own, a feminine voice came to me and said, you can either forgive yourself and forgive everyone else and forgive your entire fucking past and just resolve to live differently tomorrow for the rest of your life. Or you can keep going through this and you can keep vomiting up this shame, this guilt, these insecurities, this depression, this whatever it was. It was all swirling around, all the gunk in my system. And I was like, I forgive. I surrender. I remember saying out loud that I surrender. And all the butterflies went away. Immediately felt good. Laid down on the mat and had probably like 4 hours of just like delightful, wonderful thoughts about people in my life and emails that I wanted to write to people to tell them I love them. I mean, it was so impactful. It was amazing.
And it stayed with you.
Yeah. Yeah. At the time, it felt like someone grabbing me by the shoulders and violently shaking me and going, this is your new life. And everything was like overwhelming. But since coming back and being able to integrate and having distance, I describe it like I was nudged. But if you nudge a planet or an asteroid, you know, give it a little nudge.
Yeah.
It's going to change its orbit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I might be heading towards another galaxy or slamming into the sun very soon, but I feel so much better for having done it. And I think it's dangerous to go like, hey, try a medicine from a plant that some people call a drug to see if it improves your life. I get that. It's dangerous. But, you know, I have met many people that have kicked heroin addiction.
Yeah.
That have kicked post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. That have kicked a lot of stuff by going through Iboga, Ibogaine experiences, or going through ayahuasca experiences. And so I'm always like, I'm never the one to say, you go try it, go do it. But that's why I don't call it a drug now. Because I feel like when you call it a drug, you put it in this bucket with all these other substances that can have really negative effects. And I go, look, for me and for a handful of folks that I've had the privilege of meeting and discussing with openly, it's a plant medicine. It healed. Definitely did some healing.
It's okay, and I don't want to be a bummer. We recently ran a story on site of a guy who did die. But
doing ayahuasca in Peru.
But I don't know if he was in Peru.
Oh.
He might have been in
because there's people have died doing it.
Yeah.
But I think the important distinction is you make they don't die from the ayahuasca.
No.
They die from wandering off into a jungle or not being in a controlled environment and like a setting with hydration.
Well, and this guy was on, if they found out he had been doing other drugs, which is not recommended.
That's not part of the, if you're serious about getting something out of an experience like ayahuasca, then you should be serious about your intention going into it, which means you're not allowed to have sugar.
Wow.
You're not supposed to have salt. You're not supposed to eat meat. It was part of the journey. I had to give it all up for 3 or 4 days going in, and then the week while I was there, it sucked.
Yeah.
But if you can't do that, why do you expect anything else? Why do you think you deserve...
I do think people, drug addicts, will go.
Yeah.
And a drug addict, you know, in some way can't control that.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
Okay, we so have to wrap up, and it's been so fun. fun. Are you having fun? Did you have fun?
I had a blast. I feel guilty because I rambled so much. We filled a compact flashcard.
Can you purge that guilt then, but not throw up in my office?
Can I use that purse then? can I flip this space chair that I'm in and just fill it up?
You got to be nicer to that chair.
I love this chair. Feelings.
Okay, so what we're wrapping up, and that was so good. Thank you.
Wasn't he a doll? Don't you love Kevin Pereira? Go follow him on the Twitter. Find him on Facebook. He's real popular. Go check out Super Creative TV. Go download his podcast, Pointless, if you don't already listen. And keep checking out this podcast and tell your friends and go give it a 5-star reviews. And keep reading After Party Chat. And I will talk to you guys very soon.